Coming up on the Audible, we have a very emotional interview with the father of a player who got in trouble for violence against a woman and is now trying to start his second chance. It's a very interesting conversation. We hope you'll get a lot out of it. And afterward, we'll talk about some of the events going on in college football right now. All that coming up on the Audible.
Welcome to the Audible. I am Bruce Feldman, joined as always by Stuart Mandel. As we're taping this on Monday morning, we have a very interesting guest today, Earl Johnson, his son DeAndre Johnson, who came out of junior college and signed with FAU to play quarterback a couple months ago. Many of you may remember the name DeAndre Johnson, former blue chip freshman at FSU, but in July of 2015 was dismissed from the program after video emerged of him hitting a woman at a bar. Johnson later went on Good Morning America to apologize to the woman and subsequently ended up at East Mississippi Community College, a.k.a. Last Chance U. We're going to get into that story, as Stu alluded to at the top. It's a very emotional interview. The reason why we wanted to have Earl on is because this issue is not a one-off. The violence against women subject comes up often, not just in sports, but certainly it has in our little corner of the world in sports. And the case of Joe Mixon, especially in the last year, I think as it escalated, is a prime example of that. And where Earl Johnson and DeAndre kind of come into this is what happened on video that night from the bar. I think there's a lot more that, you know, in the wake of it and the steps that this family and he took and have taken to show that he was contrite and have been determined to do since then, I think is relevant here as we're going forward in a very important subject.
And as we were talking to him, Bruce, I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm not sure I've ever heard this perspective before. Maybe I've seen a quote in a story from the parent in this situation, but I've certainly never heard the voice of a father. And you'll hear him get all emotional about what, you know, just recalling the moment this happened in 2015. You know, I think for us in the media, you know, especially somebody like him who hadn't played yet at college, it's just, you know, the name, you hear the name and then you see the headlines and you never really hear about, I mean, the impact. Obviously there's the first person you think of is the victim and the impact it must have on her and the family, but you don't think about necessarily how it impacts his family. So I think it's an important topic that we're getting into. And I hope that people get something out of it.
All right. And with that, let's get to our guest. Earl, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah. So let's get back to that horrific incident from the bar that night. When you find out your son did that, what goes through your mind?
I think my first, it was disbelief. It was a lot of hurt. It was anger. And also at the same time, just wanting to find out what happened, you know? I mean, how could I help him? Because I know this was devastating because I knew what went into the process of him reaching and obtaining his goal of going to his dream school. So it was devastating.
So from there, we should point out right up top, he's done a lot to go visit battered women's shelters and speak out at a bunch of different places, you know, to camps and clinics, to high school, even I guess colleges, about what he did. So what was the process that you kind of get going forward? Obviously we mentioned at the top before you came on that he had a very public apology when he sits down with Michael Strahan on Good Morning America. So what do you do then to try to begin to hopefully make it right or make it at least better?
I'm gonna try to hold myself together because it still hurts. Okay, I think the first thing that we really, and I believe was the most important thing and the most important part of the process was that we had to have him admit, you know. We have to have him admit that he made a mistake. He used poor judgment. And, you know, that he can't move forward until he acknowledges, you know, the key facts in that process, and that's probably that he needed to apologize to the person that he hurt. And I mean, it takes a really big person to admit when we're wrong, regardless of what prompted our actions, you know, that we were wrong. And that's one thing we wanted him to understand. You know, we wanted him to understand that, you know, that we loved him, you know. And I can't stress enough, you know, that word, you know, when something like this and so devastating has happened, it's real vital, you understand, and it's essential that DeAndre knew without a doubt, and that he knew that we still loved him. You know, I mean, we didn't approve of his actions because we raised him much better than that. But he had to know that we still loved him, and that this was going to—it was going to take a toll, and it took a toll on everyone in the process. You know, just to like rebuild him back up. You know, because I mean, you know, life has—you know—it teaches you many lessons, and one of them is that failure is not the end of the road. You know, so we have to get him and help him to realize that this isn't the end of the road, you know, and because he made a bad choice and a bad mistake, you know, we didn't want him to give up on his dreams. You know, we wanted him to know that he could still obtain them. You know, we tried to surround him with like great family, friends, mentors. We have great pastors. You know, his pastor was there for him. A good friend of mine, Dr. Ron Kirstner, is a sports psychologist. He was there. So we have to build him up. You know, we have to build him up physically, mentally, spiritually. Like we had made up a slogan in the process, and we called it PMS. And, you know, now I ain't talking about that kind of PMS. You know, but the PMS was, you know, we're gonna work on your physical, mental, and spiritual. You know, so spiritually, you know, we have to do a lot of work with him. You know, and I think the most natural thing that you want to do is go into hiding. I mean, you know, you almost want to sequester yourself away from people and the world. So what we really have to do was just get out, you know, so to speak. We have to get back. We have to really get him back on the horse, you know. We have to become more passionate, you know, about the mission that we was on, you know. And I mean, I say this to anybody. It don't matter whatever your mission is, you know. I mean, whatever the mission is for you, you know, and ours was to make sure that he didn't go into like a depression, and that he wanted to continue going to college and pursue his dream of earning the degree. And, you know, and quite naturally, you know, one of our stipulations was that he probably needed to take some time off from sports, you know, and concentrate on himself. But we also want him to understand that by no means, you know, did we want him to forget about his dreams or his goals, you know, and just wanted to continue working on his mentality, you know, and this is where we had to really make sure that we helped him to hold up and don't go into a deep depression, you know. So that's where we worked with a lot of, you know, therapists and just try to get him to understand his actions and understand the pain, you know, that he was going through, and understand the pain and the hurt, you know, that the person that he hurt was experiencing. You know, and to be honest with you, I think a lot was, you know, our family, our friends, you know, his peers, you know, they also heard it too, you know. So we just, you know, we just had like a lot of private sessions. You know, we would just talk about things and try to sort out things, sort out emotions with him. And I mean, DeAndre is not a real emotional person. He's more of an introvert. And I think in this process, it helped him to be more, it helped him to open up more, you know, because, you know, we had our pastor by us, by our side. So we did a lot of things spiritually, you know, and I'm not trying to like to Bible beat anyone, you know, but to be honest, man, it was our faith that played a huge part, you know, in our recovery. And I think it's just important that your child knows, you know, that he's a child of God, and, you know, and God wants you to, and him to be happy and successful in life. And just because you go through some bad things, you know, or you may fail, but that doesn't mean that God is done with you. You know, I think he's just telling you that, just maybe not right now, you know. So, you know, that was pretty much, you know, the process and just a lot of family and things like that. And I'm sorry for getting emotional.
Well, we understand, and Earl, I we really appreciate you coming on and talking about something that's still obviously very difficult to talk about. I have a question for you, and unfortunately, I think it may raise more emotions, but I think it's important for people who, you know, who've never been through this to understand. When something like this happens in college football, and it becomes a big national headline, people who never previously heard of your son, who only know his name from this, render a lot of judgment, you know, and I assume there was kind of a firestorm in that, you know, obviously for him to go on national television, it shows what a firestorm it was. When you're seeing this and hearing this reaction, you know, I know you're balancing the fact that, you know, he did something wrong, but I got to imagine it's very hard to hear strangers question your son's character and integrity. How do you deal with that?
It's just because I think it's just that from early on in the process, yeah, we did a lot of just trying to understand this process and how things go, and that, you know, I mean, you might run into some bad times, you know, but you just got to take it and deal with it head on, man. I'm not going to lie to you, man. It hurted me to see my son on every talk show in America, people talking about him. It hurts me now to see people, you know, say, well, he's coming back. But, you know, in my opinion, he never left, because DeAndre never stopped going to school. You know, he graduated. He's got a degree already. And he left Florida State 1 week, and the next week he was in another school. You know, so it just hurts me to hear people speak so negatively about him that don't really know him. But at the same time, I understand. But to answer your question, it does bother, and it hurts. But, you know, like I said, man, we have to lean back on our faith, because, you know, it may sound, you know, like a quote you hear every day, but it's true. You know, God doesn't put any more on you than you're able to withstand. So we have to trust in that, trust in the Lord in this whole process.
Earl, so when he gets to East Mississippi, he does not play football that first year. Can you tell us some of the things that both the school as well as your family, you know, felt like he needed to do to take those steps forward in terms of the outreach, whether it was, you know, going to visit, you know, battered women's shelters or speaking out? And how quickly did he do it, and how often did he go to speak about his not only his mistake, but also what it did to him and trying to help others maybe learn from what happened with him?
Well, one thing, when we went to East Mississippi, and I just really, you know, like to say that I am very grateful that he went there. I'm very grateful for Dr. Tom Huebner, Coach Stevens, Coach Clint Trickett, because from the beginning, they kind of, you know, I thought it would be just like, hey, we want him for football. He's a great quarterback. But I think they, in the beginning, they kind of understood that he had to do some work on himself. So it kind of fit right in with our vision that we wanted for him. It was almost like God answered the prayer, you know? So they were great with setting up things, and Coach Stevens and the president was right along. We all insisted that maybe you give football a break and they set up a lot of things. You know, he did anger management. He visited domestic violence shelters. He did camps with kids. He spoke on the campus. He met some nice people there in the cafeteria that took him to church. And, you know, so it was pretty well-structured. And at the same time, he also knew, which was something that we never had a problem with DeAndre, was that he had to maintain great grades. And he did everything, and he embraced the whole situation. I'm very proud of him.
Now, I know part of the process going on, as we mentioned at the top, he's now going to play for FAU. And as you mentioned, Clint Trickett, who was his quarterback coach at East Mississippi, and now Clint is actually the tight ends coach at FAU. But before that, his older brother, Travis, was the offensive coordinator at FAU, and that was on the previous staff before Lane Kiffin got there. I know, and I think this is a rather unusual step for a typical recruit. The president of the junior college sent a very long, detailed letter, not just vouching for the player, but sent it to the president of FAU. And some of the, you know, the details in there were talking about not just him being a model student and engaging and bright and well-read, but just really the steps they took to make sure he was doing well. And this person talking about the relationships that DeAndre had established. Did you ever wonder, because I believe FAU was the only FBS program coming out of junior college that had offered him a scholarship. Did you ever wonder, hey, you know, no matter how good of a football player he was, and I think he was Mr. Football in the state of Florida a couple of years ago, that he had too much quote-unquote baggage for somebody else maybe to take?
Yes, and I worried, I wondered. But, I mean, there was a few schools behind the scenes that didn't want to say, you know, that would – you know, they wanted to, like, well, just hold on. We're trying to get through the process because, you know, as I've come to find out, DeAndre's come to find out, and if we all have come to know that this is a very serious process and they are taking it very, very serious. And even though, you know, DeAndre's was a misdemeanor, they're still coming. It's going to be hard even on misdemeanors. And this is something that has to get better, that these kids and everyone, we all have to be aware that, you know, violence against women is not going to be accepted in this society. And we just have to do and go through what we have to go through, you know, till we get to the point where, you know, this is not a problem anymore. So at that stage, I kind of understood, I kind of expected it, because I was keeping my eyes on things. And maybe if they didn't tweak a few things, DeAndre could have, you know, went to a numerous amount of schools, but they kind of tweaked it. And so that told me that they're, you know, they're getting very serious or doing what they claim extreme vetting. And but I also would like to say that I think that just like anything in this world, you know, one mistake should not define anybody. You know, this is a world, you know, we come from a God that's a God of love. Not just a second chance, another chance, and another chance. And I'm pretty much speaking about me and my life, you know. And I think we need not to forget that, because especially we're dealing with young kids. And these kids, you know, it's very important that, you know, that we teach them and that we show them love, too. You know, not just because they made a mistake. Let's just shut them out to the world. I mean, and we all know there's a lot more people, and there's people in higher places that's probably done a lot more things than some of these kids are doing. You know, I think coaches get second chances. I mean, why not these kids? And I know I'm saying all kids. Some things, you know, we understand. But I think we need to loosen up a bit as far as if these children go through these quote-unquote so-called process and they're extremely remorseful and doing things to work on it. So let's give them a chance, another chance, because we have so much going on in this world and kids are just doing so much things. And you don't know if you take something from a kid, especially a minority kid, you know, if they could just go the other way, you know. And not all kids have a strong foundation like DeAndre had, you know, a good spiritual background, two parents that that they we might not be married or together, but we co-raised our children together. We work together. You know, we listen to each other, and as far as to help and do what's good for them. So I think, and I understand, you know, what you were saying, Chris, but I think they should, you know, still consider that these are just young kids too, you know, 18, 17, 19 years old. And I don't know too many people in this world that haven't made a mistake or haven't had to have a second chance.
So when he commits to FAU, you had no idea, no way of knowing at the time that there would be coaching change and that they would bring in Lane Kiffin, who has had a lot of success coaching quarterbacks, but is also obviously a very controversial figure. Did you have any reservations about him going there once Lane was hired?
No, to be honest with you, DeAndre was going to go there whether Lane Kiffin came or whether he didn't come. Okay, because once we met, let me tell you, FAU did an extreme vetting on DeAndre. They reached out into our community here in Jacksonville, you know, all the way up into Florida State. I mean, East Mississippi, his pastor. And I really felt good about them and the fact that they understood what he did was horrendous. But they also understood that he was a young man that through their vetting system seemed to be a model that we can probably give a second chance to. So, like I was saying, whether Lane Kiffin came or not, I think DeAndre would have went. And once I saw that, because, I mean, DeAndre had a career in, I think Dwayne DeAndre was, he was All-American, he's undefeated. I think he was back to number two or number one player in certain categories coming out of JUCO Junior College, that he could have went to any school. But once I saw that, what was going on, and certain coaches would tell us, you know, what was going on. But I prayed to God that God would just give us the school. And God, he done just exceedingly and more. You know, he gave us the school and also brought us the coach. We didn't have to go to the coach. He brought the coach to us.
Earl, when you talked about, you know, how he showed he was remorseful and the things he's doing, I know that, you know, he had apologized to the victim of, you know, from the bar that night. Is he still committed to going out and speaking and talking to especially younger athletes, but also just younger students and younger men about his path and what he did that night and how he's learned from it?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a passion. It's going to be something, and I believe that's his mission, is to speak on this subject and to let young people know. And it don't matter, you know, whether he's able to move on to the NFL or not. This is going to be a passion. This is going to be his platform, and it just depends on, you know, how high it goes. But I know one of the things that the school has. Things that they want to do with him, and I'm not privy to speak on that because, you know, they, you know, that's theirs. But things that me and his mom and his brother and some people in our circle, you know, we want to do a camp in Boca for the kids, a quarterback camp, and maybe take that opportunity where DeAndre could speak to some of the kids and some of the parents, and that's something that we want to do. He was invited this week by the opening, Brian Stump, to come down to Miami Saturday and speak to the kids at the camp. But that's something I need to have checked out because, you know, I don't want to get caught up in any kind of violations or things like that. But it's just a matter of him driving down and speaking, because that's where I really want him speaking to some of these elite athletes, these kids that's getting ready to go into college. Speak about and talk about his situations and let them know all the accolades of breaking Tim Tebow's records and Mr. Football and All-American. It don't mean nothing if you make a mistake. It all could be just taken away from you in 6 seconds. So he wants to apologize to her in person. You know, it's one thing for him to apologize over TV and, you know, we know that she's moved on to a different school. And hopefully in the near future, you know, he would love to meet with her and apologize to her. And he's even talked about maybe we could do something together, Dad. I said, maybe that might be nice. And, you know, I've heard, because they did a story here in Jacksonville with her and him. And she comes from really nice parents. And her parents, you know, from what I've heard and from what I've seen, they don't hate DeAndre. She doesn't hate DeAndre. So I'm hoping that maybe these two young people can get together, because, you know, let's not forget her. You know, she went through a lot, you know, and it was bad on her family, too.
All right, Earl. Well, we appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, it's a very emotional subject, and we appreciate you sharing your experience as well as going forward. I think we should also, you know, it's worth noting DeAndre's got a younger brother who is a big recruit in the 2018 class, right?
Yes, sir. Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
So you'll be going through
Tyreek Johnson.
Tyreek, and you'll be going through the recruiting process, or you probably already are going through the recruiting process again with him.
Yeah, I was just out with him yesterday. He just got invited to the Nike opening in Oregon, and that's something that DeAndre did as well. And so I'm kind of glad to just wrap this up and, you know, taking kids to school every morning for the last 6 years, picking them up, and, you know, or his mom picking them up and taking them, you know, just want to do some different things, sit back and enjoy them at the next level.
Well, as Bruce said, Earl, we really appreciate it. I know it was extremely difficult to come on here and talk about it, so we can't thank you enough for coming on.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate y'all allowing us this platform.
Thanks, Earl.
I wasn't kidding, Bruce, when I said to him how much we appreciated him coming on and doing this, because it had to be extremely difficult. And I learned a lot from that. You know, I guess I said, as I said before the interview, I never really heard that perspective in a story like this before.
Yeah, and it's a very sobering subject. And I think that, you know, again, it's one perspective. And I think we talked about this a lot during the year as it relates to Joe Mixon. But for a lot of people, when somebody has done something horrific, and especially if there's video of it, that is the incident that will forever define them. And I think in this case, he is trying to make it as positive as he can and try to impact other people in a positive way.
And you remember when the news came out in December that about him signing with FAU, and people didn't realize at the time that he had been committed there already and that it wasn't Lane Kiffin necessarily going out and pursuing him, but it immediately became, oh, look at Lane Kiffin, look what he's doing. You know, he's already creating controversy, going out and signing a kid who, you know, was found guilty of violence against a woman. So obviously the turns out, as you heard in the interview, he was going to go there regardless, but it just shows you, you know, as soon as the name comes up, like you said, it's still associated with him. As we turn our attention to current college football, so Lane was the Alabama offensive coordinator, and then Sark was very briefly. Nick Saban has now hired his full-time replacement for this coming season, and it's a guy who, frankly, I don't think college football fans are all that familiar with.
No, it's, you know, he was once a former Nick Saban grad assistant at Michigan State. He is Brian Daboll, who is really, that was the last time he worked in college football, and that was almost 20 years ago. And like, you know, a lot of other guys who, you know, the Saban tree is related to Bill Belichick, and that's really where Brian Daboll spent a bunch of time on the Patriots staff. He was most recently their tight ends coach. He has been an offensive coordinator in the NFL three different times. You know, the teams all struggled, it should be noted, when he was with the Browns and the Chiefs and the Dolphins. And so if you're an Alabama fan, I think you just got to trust, hey, Nick Saban knows what he's doing here. And, you know, because it's, you know, again, it's not like he hired a guy who had a ton of success or is known as some kind of offensive guru or someplace else.
Well, I think we're seeing him go back from, you know, I mean, both Kiffin and Sarkisian did not necessarily fit the profile of his more anonymous offensive coordinators before that. And I think we're seeing him go back to that here with a guy who is not necessarily, I mean, he wanted Lane, and Lane did kind of reinvent his offense. I wouldn't expect that that's what he's expecting here. Basically, I would assume that it's going to be, you know, pick up where we left off and keep doing what's working.
Yeah, and it's a guy who, you know, has minimal. I think he was the Jets quarterback coach, you know, for a couple of years, but it's not like he's really been a quarterback's guy.
Well, in particular, I don't see how he has the experience. I mean, by the end, while Lane has an NFL and West Coast offense background, you know, certainly this past year with Jalen Hurts, it was much more of a what you've come to see from college offenses with the quarterback run game. And I just can't imagine he, having spent all this time in the NFL, where they still very much frown on the quarterback run game, that he would have much of any experience with it.
Yeah, we'll see how it unfolds. Now, you know who does have a lot of experience with the quarterback run game is Mike Locksley, who is on that staff and is a co-offensive coordinator, and I would guess he would be pretty involved in that. This is interesting to see how it plays out because, you know, for college folks, you know, we just don't know much about Brian Daboll.
Did you know his name when you first saw that they had hired him? Did you know that name?
I did. Clearly not following me on Twitter, Stu. I was the one who reported they were interviewing him last week, so.
I guess I missed that amidst the more high-profile names that you were reporting, like Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich.
No, this was last Monday, so that was when the name really took on some traction.
Well, I got to admit, I'm going in cold here, so I'm being open-minded, and we'll see how he does. But certainly this is not, it's not Helfrich. It's not one of these guys that we're used to seeing on the college level.
That hurts, man.
You're really upset that I missed this tweet. Twitter moves fast.
You don't read FoxSports.com. I did a story on it, man. Jesus.
Okay. Sorry.
It's okay.
All right. And also this Monday morning that we're recording this, Boston College announces that Brad Bates is going to step down as AD in June to go work for a search firm. By the way, that will be yet another BC AD that works for a search firm. Gene DeFilippo is also doing that. And speaking of him, I mean, so you look at BC Athletics. I don't think that's a school we talk about much now, and there's a reason for that. They pretty much stink in every high-profile sport, but that didn't used to be the case. I mean, it's not surprising that he would be on his way out, given his athletic department is just in dire straits right now. But man, how did this happen? Let's retrace our steps here because I'm thinking back to around 2006, 2007-ish. BC had just joined the ACC.
And they had Matt Ryan. They were beating Virginia Tech on a Thursday night. You remember that game?
Oh, yeah. And they were number two in the country at that point in time. They were in the running for the BCS championship game until they lost shortly after that. And then in basketball, and this goes back a little bit to me covering them in the Big East tournament when they're still in the Big East, Al Skinner had a great run with guys like Jared Dudley and Craig Smith. I remember they were the number one seed in the Big East tournament one year when the Big East was, you know, UConn, Syracuse, all these behemoths. So now they can barely win an ACC basketball game. And there was a stat that our friend John Solomon on CBS put up earlier that's really stunning.
You want me to read it to you?
Oh, you have it? Go ahead.
I do. So in BC, and it's, I don't call it their only main sports because BC has always been really good in hockey too.
Mm-hmm.
But in this men's basketball, women's basketball, and football, since 2015-16, Boston College is 8-70 in ACC play.
Wow.
That is brutal. And Steve Adazio, who in 4 years is three games under 500 overall, is 10-22 in the ACC.
Yeah, I feel like football must be responsible for much of those eight wins, right?
Not really. I mean, they were pretty bad.
I mean, they did go to a bowl game this year and win a bowl game.
Yeah.
Boston College this year is 2-12 in ACC play in basketball. And I believe they were 0-18 last year.
So they won three games in the ACC in football this year. So they were 3-5. Here's who their wins were this year: Maryland, Wake Forest, UConn, NC State, Buffalo, Wagner, and UMass.
No, they weren't a good team. Let's not. I mean, that's ultimate proof you can get to a bowl game without beating anybody good.
And that was after going 3-9 last year.
So I feel like the moment things turned south for BC was that really, because who was the coach? Nobody remembers this now. Jeff Jagodinski was the coach of that Matt Ryan team you're talking about. And then I believe Matt Ryan was gone the next year and they were still pretty good.
They won 9-5.
Played in the ACC title game back-to-back years. And then Gene DeFilippo fired him just for interviewing for an NFL job. It was, how dare you go flirt with another job, and fired him. Can you imagine if every coach was held to that standard? And it's been a rough, rough run ever since.
And you can't blame it on going up to the from the Big East to the ACC per se, because in their first 4 years in the ACC, they won 39 games.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, was that the bar that BC should be striving for, and anything short of that is beneath them? Or was that one of those runs that maybe was deceiving, and that BC is going to have an awful hard... I mean, obviously they want to be better than they are now, but is it realistic that they'll be a contender in the ACC? They're in a division with Florida State and Clemson and Louisville.
One of my best friends was an athlete at BC, and once a year I'd always go up to a game up there. I thought it was a very cool place to go to college. It's obviously a great education and a great city to go to college in. The thing I'd always heard there is they expect to be really good once every 4 years to have a run at maybe 10 wins.
Mm-hmm.
And then around there, they figured they'd win maybe 8 or 9. And then the other year, maybe it'd be a 6-6 year. Like, they would have a run, you know, be great once every 4 years and then be pretty good the other ones. The problem is now they've been pretty much mediocre ever since Jeff Jagodzinski left.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So you would think it'd be very hard to recruit great players there. But think about over the last 10 years or so, some of the high round, I mean, I'm looking at it right now, first round picks that have come out of there. Matt Ryan, and this is starting in 2006. Mathias Kiwanuka was a first round pick. Matt Ryan, Goster Chehalis, I do not remember him.
Yeah, I think he was an Indianapolis kid.
BJ Raji, Anthony Costanzo, Luke Kuechly.
You know what those all have in common, Stu? I would bet none of those guys were more than 3-star guys. They were all really good evaluations. Luke Kuechly, Notre Dame didn't want. Anthony Costanzo was way undersized and then I think ended up at a prep school. BJ Raji, I want to say, is from New Jersey. And maybe it's either him or Ron Brace. I'm getting confused. It was another, you know, defensive tackle there. But they were really under-the-radar recruits who did really well there.
And that's the formula. And so the question is, can that formula be replicated? But we're going to start first, obviously, by seeing who the new AD is. And that's significant in that that person will probably decide Steve Adazio's fate.
Right.
Hey, before we go, on the last podcast last week, we had a couple of consumer complaints. Well, we had at least one consumer complaint.
I don't know what that means. What is consumer complaints?
We had some listener feedback. There were some Michigan fans who were upset that when we were talking about, at the time, Michael Johnson was still presumed to be going to Michigan.
By the way, when you say it, I keep thinking of the Olympic sprinter. I always think of him as Mike Johnson.
Okay. Well, Mike Johnson, they were upset that we didn't actually mention any of his qualifications, that he was an NFL coordinator, and that maybe people were getting the impression that they had just plucked Joe Schmo off the street because he has a really good quarterback son. So, yes, obviously we should have mentioned that it's not like this wasn't a guy that would be qualified to work at a college football program. We apologize for that.
I do feel like a little of this, though, is blowback from whatever the Feinbaum stuff is. I went back and listened to our podcast because I saw some Michigan people, because obviously it was news I had reported, you know, subsequent to that. And I mentioned that his son was a 2019 quarterback in the story. But again, in this kind of, you know, I kind of was like, whatever Feinbaum, whatever else was set out there.
Here's the thing. When we brought it up, honestly, you have to understand, at this time of year, we are scrounging for anything to talk about. And we brought it up, and we were both kind of apathetic about that topic. And we were like, and I asked you, like, do you think this is unethical? And you're like, no. I'm like, me neither. Not a big deal. And then the very next day is the infamous tweet heard around the world calling out Feinbaum, where at first I was like, what is this about? Where is this coming from? I know Feinbaum's been, you know, had some shtick recently about making fun of Michigan fans, but what's the Harbaugh connection here? And only to find out that he went on Outside the Lines and called him a cheater, said he was cheating, which is a much different reaction to that story than you and I had.
Right, right. I mean, that's the thing. I get why Michigan fans or some of them would be sensitive to it. The story as we were discussing it, though, really had more to do with
the rule.
Yeah, the rule itself.
That's why it was a story to me, is that it coincides with them probably, possibly implementing this rule that would basically make that impossible to do going forward. Which brings up an interesting question, right? Like, as we said, he's perfectly qualified to work for a college football staff. Should he be precluded from that just because his son is coming up, you know, is going to be a high school junior? I don't know. it's an interesting topic.
And also, I think it is different in the case of this guy who, let's be honest, to go from an NFL coordinator and a college coordinator to a receivers coach, it's not like, you know, it's not the opposite or whatever. So this is different than, hey, we're hiring a high school coach who, while they may be good coaches, has never worked at that level before.
Right.
So
the only other thing I would mention is we had a talk at the end about journalism and breaking into journalism. And I mean, the entry point was, did you actually learn anything from your college classes or did you learn it all out on the field? And we were very both adamant about, yeah, it's out on the field. Okay, coincidentally, our friends Andy Stables and Lindsay Schnell had a podcast where, and this was, you know, give credit to Andy for his outside-the-box ideas. He decided to devote an entire episode to analyzing the movie Necessary Roughness. You remember that, I'm sure.
I do. It's Kathy Ireland's finest work.
They went hardcore with Dan Rubenstein, analysis of Necessary Roughness. And in the course of that, they're talking about blow-off classes like the ones in that movie. And they're fully admitting that they skipped class and took easy classes just like we did. And I'm just concerned because I know we have some overlapping listeners there. And we must, I assume, have some young listeners and that we are just not sending the right message here. So I just want to say to all of our younger listeners who may be in high school still or in college, go to class. Stay in school. Go to class. Take your
school
seriously.
I'm not
going to
be a hypocrite still. You preach, but
Well, just don't do what we said, basically. I don't want to be corrupting America's youth right here.
I'm guessing if you graduated, you probably were much more diligent about it.
Well, where I was really diligent was in high school. I mean, I worked much harder academically in high school to get into a school like Northwestern than I did once I actually got there, which is a lot of, by the way, you hear that about Stanford sometimes too, that it's harder to get into than the actual school is. Oh man, at least one of our listeners isn't going to kill me for saying that. Anyway.
I know which one too.
Yeah. Also, it depends on your major. The engineering students work their ass off in college at Northwestern. Maybe the liberal arts, not as much.
Did you ever cheat in school?
No, but my formula was this.
Seriously, did you ever cheat in school?
No, I didn't. But this is what my formula was, you know, I would take whatever class was, psychology, sociology, whatever. Like, just go to the library two nights before, night before the exam, cram the heck out of it, do well on the test. And then that stuff just went right out of my head. Like, it went in for 2 days and then it left forever. I do feel a little bit guilty now that I kind of wasted this opportunity, right? I went to a very acclaimed university and I just did not take advantage of what it had to offer academically. But at the same time, like, it just didn't, like, sociology, psych, those classes weren't going to impact where my chosen field. So that was my thinking at the time. I felt my time was spent, and I do still think my time was spent more valuable fashion. You know, I would be at the school paper till 1 a.m. every night putting that thing out, but, you know, that prepared me for today.
Mm.
All right, I'm not going back down that road. Go to class, even if Bruce won't say so.
No, I'm not going to be a hypocrite about it. I'm not going to say screw up and do everything that I did. I'm just not going to try to tell you to do stuff that I know I didn't do.
So. Go to class and get good grades, because honestly, I'm not sure whether any of our jobs are going to exist 5 years from now. This field that you might be trying to get
format,
into,
yes.
Yeah, might not exist. So you might want to have a fallback option in case you want to go work for a consulting company or tech or whatnot. Maybe might be good to have that 3.5 on your resume.
Yes, and I will give my own piece of advice. If you have a car and you're commuting to class or something, and you're going to approach a light where if it means go left, you're going to have to go to some philosophy class that's required. Where you go right means you get to go home. If the light is green, don't do that. Just
go to your philosophy class.
Listen to the BS.
Yeah.
Try to get a good grade just in case you need it for something else in life.
All right. As always, you can send your emails, because we'll be doing emails in the next episode, to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Let us know what kind of guests you'd like to hear from as we continue to go through this offseason. Obviously, our last couple have been a little unconventional. Hopefully, you've enjoyed it. But yeah, let us know what kind of guests you'd like to hear from. And subscribe to the Audible. If you haven't done so already, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts from. We'll see you next time.